This is a Collider.com audio interview.
Now, did you base your teacher on someone? I would love to have been in your class. You look like you were so much fun.
Oh, yeah, I'd be a great teacher. I actually did, I was an acting teacher for a long time, and so I have some teaching experience, but, you know, it's like in an alternate universe. I was, you know, going to the University of Washington in Seattle, and I was an English major, and, you know, had I not chosen to move to New York and be an actor, I'd very easily be an English teacher at a suburban Seattle high school. So Larry White is really not that far from who I really might have been, you know.
Uh-huh. Are you that metaphysical, though? I mean,
I am. I actually have spiritual beliefs that are very important to me, and I grew up a member of the Baha'i faith, and it was one of the things that drew me to this project in reading the script and seeing the spiritual and metaphysical journey that the story takes, as well as the science fiction and adventure journey. That's such a rare thing in a Hollywood film, and I was really attracted to that.
Did you want to be a part of something aimed at a younger audience than most of your other stuff?
No, I didn't really. I didn't really look at it that way. I think that I just really responded to the story. I didn't really think about it as a family film or I should expand my horizons to incorporate a family audience. I was offered after that season of The Office, last hiatus, a number of projects that were very broadly comic. And we had, after playing Dwight for 8 or 9 months, I just didn't really feel like doing that. So I wanted to try something different and play a real character. And although he's eccentric, I mean, he's a real three-dimensional person that you could picture really living in the real world. So.
Was it daunting having Bob as the director and the head of the studio?
It wasn't daunting to me. I mean, I don't really care about that. I mean, you know, if I did a bad job and he never hired me again, like, I just get work somewhere else, I'm fine. Yeah, I got a TV show. you know, it was a little bit, sorry, did I kick somebody? It was a little bit, you know, weird. I just didn't know his work as a director. And so that was a little bit scary for me. But I actually, he had directed this one other film called The Book of Love a long time ago, and I actually had a friend in that film, John Cameron Mitchell, the creator of Hedwig and The Angry Inch. So I called John, and I was like, so what's Bob Shea like? And, you know, he gave me the story of Bob Shea and said, you know, ultimately he's a good guy and a smart guy, and, you know, he'll treat you well. And so that led me to, you know, to sign up for the project.
We had a little bit more to your romantic scenes that weren't in the film. Do you remember anything more?
Yeah, I think I get it on with Catherine Hahn. Well, I think they cut out after a kiss, but then we had a scene when she's, like, going to take her clothes off and I'm in bed and stuff like that. So that scene continued.
Mm, okay. Mm-hmm. Was there anything else of yours that didn't make it into the final cut? I assume you've seen the final cut at this point.
Yes, my ass did not make it into the final cut.
It's in the commercial. No.
They had to CGI underwear onto me when I had that pajamas and I'm walking to the refrigerator to get the chocolate cake.
Well, it's very visible. It was very visible last night that they were suddenly filling in the underwear by CGI. It was a most peculiar moment.
Yeah.
Weren't you kidding?
No, it's for real. For real. I like the opportunity to take my clothes off, especially for comedic effect. Anytime on The Office they need a laugh, they ask me to just take my shirt off. Let's just get Dwight to take his shirt off. And so I have no problem getting naked, but apparently that has been taken out. But I think most of my stuff is in the film. Mm-hmm. You know.
Okay. Speaking of getting naked, you were on Saturday Night Live last week. You did a scene in underwear.
Yes.
What was it like hosting the show? Was it what you expected? What? Mm-hmm. How receptive were they to your ideas? Did you have any?
I had a few. It was an amazing experience. I can't even say that doing Saturday Night Live was like a dream come true, because it was never even a dream that was on my radar at all. I never thought I would be hosting Saturday Night Live. I mean, you know, I grew up watching, you know, Buck Henry and Steve Martin and, you know, hosting, and I just never thought that would be me. But it was a great experience. It's exhilarating and terrifying, but ultimately, you know, they kept saying, like, make sure you have fun. That's the most important thing, and that's what's going to really read to the audience. And I think I was able to have fun. Actually, of the ideas, like, that was the We did a spoof on Black Snake Moan called White Possum Scream. And it was a long scene. It was like a 7-page scene. And they kept wanting to cut it. And I kept fighting with Lauren about it. I'm like, trust me on this one. Like, trust me. It's like, if you keep it short, if I'm in my tidy whities on a chain being held by a black man, it's going to be funny. It's going to be funny, writhing around. So I fought for that to stay in. And they were open to my ideas. I had a lot of ideas about the sketches I was in that I think helped them, so it was good.
How about doing live TV? Is that something you're comfortable
with? It's terrifying, man. It's unbelievable. I mean, you know, like those lights are come on the cameras and they pop on. Bleep, bleep, bleep. What you say is being heard that second by millions of people. I don't even think Saturday Night Live has a delay on it. Mm-hmm. I don't think they do, because every once in a while the F word leaks out, you know. And it's terrifying. You know, it's the same when I did Bill Maher. It was terrifying in the same way. And that was even scarier because I'm talking about politics, in which I'm not really that adept, you know. So, but yeah, it was a great experience. I feel like now I can do anything. You feel like once you've done that, you can do anything. You really do.
Do you have a taste now for a lot more live theater, perhaps?
Well, you know, I started in the theater and did theater for, you know, 8 or 9 years before I did any TV or film, and in New York. And I feel like right now is my time to do film and TV. And because I did that 8 or 9 years of theater, and but you know, when The Office is over, I would love to go back and do some plays. You know,
are there any surprises left in Dwight, or is it very comfortable at this
point? That's an excellent question. I guess I try and find the struggle is to not kind of go on autopilot with him, and to try and challenge myself to find different ways to allow his character and his comedy to come through the material. You know, I've got several years more of playing that, you know, big annoying doofus, so I've got to find ways to keep me interested in it and to keep having new surprises coming from him.
When does your season wrap for The Office?
In about 3 or 4 more weeks.
And you already, is it a finale, like a one-part finale? Are you guys building up to a few-part
finale? I think
there's
a one-hour finale, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And have you thought about what you're going to be filming this summer?
Yeah, I have a number of different, I'll definitely be filming, I think, 2 movies this summer. But, you know, we're kind of in negotiations, and there's a bunch of irons in the fire, so we'll see what those are yet. It hasn't been finalized.
When you were a kid or teen, which science fiction movies, or did you like science fiction movies or fantasy?
I think the first movie I ever went to was 2001: A Space Odyssey. Mm-hmm. I was like 5 or 6 years old. My dad
kind of
took
deep
me.
For 5 or 6.
Yeah, it was terrifying. Like that baby coming, the fetus coming over the earth. Like it was like, I had nightmares about it for the rest of my life. But yeah, I love the science fiction movies, like Logan's Run I loved, and of course the Star Wars movies, and Close Encounters, which was produced by Michael Phillips, is fantastic. That was a seminal movie for me. So.
Did you grow up in Seattle?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And doesn't Vancouver look beautiful in this movie?
It does. It is. Gorgeous, gorgeous substitute for Seattle.
How do you feel?
Vancouver. It's almost Seattle.
But, I mean, how do you feel as a Seattle boy about continuing use of Vancouver as a stand-in for Seattle?
Oh, well, you know, I feel fine about that. You know, it's a lot cheaper to film there. You know, what can you say? But it's great. I love the city of Vancouver. We went with my wife. We had a great time there for 2 months. And I love it. Went down to Seattle a couple times and had my relatives come up and visit.
Did you bring those 2 beasts with you?
My beasts, Harper Lee and Una, no, they stayed at home. We had a house sitter.
Now, why did you name your pit bulls after Una O'Neill and Harper Lee?
My wife is a writer, and we both are big readers, and we like literature, and just made sense to name the pit bulls after famous literary figures.
Do you have
I do. I have a son that's 2.5.
Oh, so he's a little young for this yet.
For Mimsy?
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. I don't think it's a film. I'm wondering what you guys think. I don't think it's for kids under 9, maybe 8 or 9.
Mm-hmm.
Well, yeah, it depends.
My little girl
said
it. She's seen it.
She saw it?
Well, the one who's in the movie.
Yeah.
As all of your office co-stars go on to do movies, when you guys come back to do the show, do you notice a difference in skills or styles?
No, there's just, you know, the main change that's happened for all of us since we've kind of gotten famous and since the success of the show and the addition of movies is it just has to do with time and energy. You know, there's just a lot more demands on your time. There's a lot more press and photo shoots and movies and rewrites and meetings and stuff like that. So having spare, I have one day off in the month of March. March 10th is my day off, so don't ask anything of me on March 10th. I already know in advance my one day off. So that's kind of one of the challenges. And you read, you know, it's funny when you read stuff about celebrities and how they're bitches and this and that. Like, you just realize, I mean, it's like there's just so many demands put on people and so many requests. And, you know, and then you have old friends writing and they want you to send headshots or they want you to host a charity event and you don't want to let them down. You want to like keep everyone happy, but it's hard, but it's great. You know, I'm not complaining. It's definitely a dream come true.
Have you directed an episode of The Office, or do you want to go in that direction?
I like directing. I've directed a lot of theater and I directed a short film and eventually I'll direct more, but I really decided early on, you know, with The Office, I just want to show up. I want to play Dwight. I want to write, and I want to direct, and I want to produce. I don't want to be involved in that way. It's just cleaner if I just show up and play my character.
How much of that is that lived between you and Steve and all of the other cast members, and how much do you really stick to a script?
The scripts are really brilliant, so we're fortunate to have really great writing. I would say what you see is about three quarters scripted. About one quarter ad-libbed.
Did you watch the British show and were you like, mm-hmm. Oh my God? Because I know when you came to the TCAs, that's what Steve said. He said, oh my God, that we would all react, that we wouldn't like it because the British was so good. But
yeah,
you really
took
it and made it your own.
I was always a big fan of the fact that there was going to be an American Office. I love the English Office. But the English Office, if you think of it, it was like a miniseries. Mm-hmm. So we were adapting an English miniseries for American television. A very different thing. There were 13 episodes they made. We're on our 50th episode right now already, and we're not even halfway done. I just thought there was always a great deal of potential in the show, and when I met Greg Daniels and saw how passionate he was about it and his intelligence and his sense of humor, I knew we were in good hands. So I was always a believer.
Have you ever had a boss like Michael, or would you want a boss like Michael?
I've had bosses worse than Michael. You know, people always are like, I don't believe Michael Scott would be the boss at that company. It's like, dude, I've worked for people so much worse than him. So much less funny and more boorish and domineering. So they're out there.
Do you think that adults and kids now in this modern world have lost their sense of wonder, or we've just rechanneled it, or how do you feel about it?
Well, I think this is what drew me to the story of The Last Mimsy is the children go on this metaphysical journey that ends up kind of saving mankind. And we're at a crossroads right now where we as humans can choose to destroy our planet and destroy ourselves, or we can unite and spiritually transform the planet, you know, into a paradise that it was meant to be. So I think this movie has a lot of resonances, and I think people are going to really respond to this film. It's going to last a long time, you know. I don't know about opening weekends and stuff like that, but when people see it and pass it on, it's going to really be a small classic.
Were you interested at all in the science of this? Because I understand there were some consultants on the film that, you know, talked about the whole string theory and all that kind of stuff. Were you interested in that just from either a research perspective or just for your own curiosity? Or?
Yeah, I guess I was most interested in how DNA works. Like, I didn't know that you could be carrying junky DNA and that toxins can affect your DNA and how that works. I still don't quite understand it, but it's pretty amazing how in the future, you know, what can happen with genetic modification and stuff like that. But I do believe that the impurities of today, both mental and spiritual and physical, you know, are going to take their toll on the planet, on people.
What do you think about working with these kids where they hadn't had much experience, but everybody's, you know, they're surprised by them?
Don't print this. They are horrible. they were great. They didn't have much experience, but they're both naturals, and it was really fun. We goofed off a lot. We had a great time. Yeah, we really did.
Did you ad-lib any of the funny lines in this film?
I think so, yeah. I seem to remember doing ad-libbing. I mean, you pretty much can't stop me from ad-libbing. It's kind of what I do. It's kind of what I bring to the equation. So I'm just going to say what pops in my head. You know, try and stay in character and stick to the story. But
were you in the Julie Taymor Titus?
I was in the stage production, yes.
Wow.
Did you end up in the meat pie, or were you not at the end?
I ended up falling into a pit and having my head cut off. Not dissimilar from my end in the Rob Zombie masterpiece House of a Thousand Corpses. Julie Taymor, Rob Zombie. Yes, I was clubbed to death by scarecrow creatures and turned sawed in half, and my torso is attached to a fish's tail, and I was turned into Fish Boy. That was my first leading role in Hollywood. So you can kind of say I was discovered by Rob Zombie. So.
Thank you, everybody.
What's the origin of your name?
Kind of crazy bohemian parents living in Seattle in the late 60s.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Nice talking to you.